Powerpuff Girls and
Mojo Jojo.
And this is Buttercup, aka Arlena.
This is Blossom, aka Kenesha.
This is Bubbles, aka Lauren.
And this is Mojo Jojo, aka Mojo Jojo.
Okay, so our assignment was to read up to page 50 for the first night. And we're each going to tell something about what made it interesting. So what stuck out to me was the Yale study talking about how...
Go ahead, Alina, just keep going. This is a conversation.
Yeah, but the Yale study in the book was talking about like the tendency for people to understate the truth. So they wouldn't know if people with the Yale would have like money or something because they can't find out that type of information. So I found it kind of interesting because it had like a lot. It was really evident about it. And they didn't know how they would find the people with the addresses because some people might not want to do the questionnaire, and then some people might, and then some people might want to just, you know, lie about it because they don't want to feel bad that they're not a millionaire because they went to Yale.
Oh, yeah.
So, Butter, Blossom.
Yeah, Blossom. One part I remember in the book was probably the part you're talking about it was the part they were talking about, like, the book sales, right? Yeah, how they were, like, people were surveyed to, like, which book they preferred. But, like, it was weird because, like, the book that had the most sales, everybody was saying they didn't, like. So it was something about, like, people who, like, who do surveys are, like, different from those who don't respond at all, like. Maybe it was, like, more people who responded to the survey who didn't buy the book. So, like, it's hard to tell, like, which book was better, which book people preferred better. Because, like, the sales didn't match. The sales did not match the
surveys.
Yeah, the surveys. So, yeah.
All right. So,
Mojo Jojo.
Yeah, Mojo Jojo. So, Mara was talking about how, like, in commercials or, like, news articles, they'll talk about a certain percent of people. So, like, for an example would be, what's that pimple stuff called?
Acne?
Proactive. So, for proactive, shut up. Somebody would be like, 60% of people prefer proactive. Then what's another con?
Clear to clear, isn't that one?
Then,
no, it's like allergies.
All right, forget it.
X. Say X.
No.
All right,
60% of people would prefer
proactive
over Neutrogena. But in the study I read, they were talking about how that you never know what 60% they're talking about. Like, it could be 60% of the people who stay home in the day. That leaves the people who are at work during the day that you didn't ask to take the survey or the questionnaire or whatever. Or if you ask the people at night, that leaves the people who are staying home during the day, so you didn't ask them. So it was just like talking about how you never know. It doesn't, when they say 60% of Americans like prefer proactive, the question should be like 60% of which Americans or whatever.
Okay, so I mean, it was a lot of good points that we read, but I do have a couple questions for David Huff, the guy who, his name Daryl Huff, I'm sorry.
Get it right, girl.
But I think my first question is, I wonder where did he get kind of like these surveys from, with like the Yale study and with the 60% study? Like, did he just get it from a group of people? Because he kept over and over saying a sample, and that doesn't represent the whole population, but his book kind of doesn't represent the whole population either. That
kind of
makes sense. I feel like it represents a sample of what he's seen.
I feel what you, where you're coming from.
All right, so you're saying like where he got his information from like, he got it how, in the book he talks about his samples. So pretty much he's saying, like, he sampled where that he got all this from. Yeah.
So I'll be like, so, I don't get it.
Because it's no way he could, like, talk to everybody in the world or whatever.
Right. Like, you can't get, if you're writing a book, I would think that you could try to get as much information and input as you can, but his just seems like it comes from studies that but didn't already
what's
have.
What's it called? They said his drawing came from the, about the Yale study. Did he get it from, like, a newspaper or something like that?
Well, it was, he did get it from Time Magazine, and the number he got was, like, $25,000 a year. So, I mean, you can't ask every Yale person because you don't know every Yale person. So he got his own sample and put it in his book, which is a collection of samples, not populations. And all he keeps talking about is people lying. Well, he lying.
He is
understanding the truth.
Why are you getting so angry, Buttercup?
Because, I mean...
Tell him why you mad.
I mean, I don't know. I just, like, if I'm going to read a book or something and I'm trying to find out information, I would think that the person would have enough information without using someone else's information to give us information. You see what I'm saying? Like,
but it's statistics, so you got to take information.
Well, it's lying with statistics. That's what the book is about.
Maybe he's
still with statistics.
How do we know this is true? This could be a lie. He's using numbers against us. He's the bad guy.
Maybe he's trying to teach us so we don't let people use numbers to trick us.
So we're learning as you.
But then...
So you're learning. He's teaching you.
He's teaching us how not to, to get cheated or how to lie.
I mean, it was kind of funny that he used, like, the meme. It was like, basically that was all about, like, measurements are highly skewed, right? And even when we're doing, like, our little skewed left and skewed right charts and stuff, we always used to say, like, skewed right or something. If the mean was to the right of the, well, I mean,
left.
Me.
What?
I said, if the skewed right, if the median was to the right of the mean. Well, if it's skewed to the right, then it's on the right side. That's how I remembered it, I think.
The tail was on the left side.
it's skewed to the left.
Okay.
I feel like when companies use statistics in their commercials, they do it for, like, propaganda. And they don't tell you, like, they don't show you the exact charts to tell you, like, how many people... out of this many people, like, did a survey or voted. They don't say, like, 25 out of 50 or 75 out of 100 voted this or that. So they just give you a percentage, and you don't really know what the percentage is or where it came from or exactly who it is. And, like, they don't give you enough details of, like, what population actually got surveyed or got asked the questions.
Right. I mean, that's true, though. Like, say we had a sample here right now, and we wanted to go tell a slave that, all right, just like the protest yesterday, we could say easily 100 kids went to the protest. We know 100 kids went to the protest, but we don't have to tell the teachers that 100 kids went to the protest. We could just say 50% went to the protest yesterday. We're not telling out of how many kids went to the protest. We're not telling what, like, you know, it could be...
What grade they were.
Right. It could have been, like, all... ninth graders or a certain ethnic group. You know what I'm saying? So everything has its secrets to it, and that's how we create lives.
Especially when you take small samples. Like, I think, like commercials with, like, Tommy Slick. Anything? Maybe, like, trying to, like...
birth control, proactive.
When they take, like, small samples and, like, use it so it can sound like big numbers to people.
Yeah.
Like, we was talking about this in the beginning of the school year. I forgot what we was talking about, but something about the 5-hour energy thing.
Yeah.
How we said a certain amount of doctors recommends this or something like that. And they were like...
but we don't know how many people they tested it on.
Exactly.
So it might work fine with you, but certain people got sick off of it or something.
Exactly.
So
they don't tell you everything. They tell you what you want to hear. You leave stuff out.
And that's what he's doing, lying to us. He's telling us what we want to hear so we can say, oh, yeah, he's right. I believe he's lying.
Very clever, David.
Daryl.
Well, I like Daryl.
When it says, choose one of the quotations inside the front cover and discuss how it relates to the introduction. Okay, so I chose the quote, there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. But, I mean, kind of like lies, damn lies, statistics are all not surrounded by the truth, because lies are the opposite of truth. Damn lies are just like, I guess, extreme lies. They're not, you know. And statistics, which we already found out in our first 50 pages, is that everything has kind of like a loophole, so nothing is really set in stone. But it relates to the introduction, because I think like the first quote on page 7 is like, there's a lot, mighty lot of crime around here. And they didn't really know what was going on, so everybody was left in a loophole and nobody knew what was going on. So that could have been lying. And they had to keep lying just to, I guess, make a defense for themselves. So that is my quote, and that's what I take on it.
My quote was that round numbers are always false. And that relates to statistics, because if you, most numbers are averaged and not rounded up, but they're averaged and used in groups of numbers. So if you take a rounded up number, you won't have the exact number, and that will mess up your data.
It ain't so much the things we don't know that get us in trouble. It's the things we know that ain't so. Artemis Ward. Personally believe that this quote is important, that statistics is not always accurate, because majority of the time, the answers are rounded or given by the medium or average of a group of data gathered. So I think that statement supports the quote. And also, it's not about the things that we don't know. It's the things that we know are wrong and false, and they don't want to admit it to us.
So the paragraph where Mr. Miles wants to summarize, a river cannot, in the first line, a river cannot, we are told, rise above the source. And in my own words, I believe that kind of means that no matter what you do to it, it kind of like stays the same. And it kind of stays where it's at, because like if you think about like when they say like the river above, it's like you're told it can't rise above the source. So if it's at one level and it can't rise above that level, then it's not going anywhere. And sometimes you just can't change things that are already set in place. So you can't change a lot of rules that are in math. You can't change statistics, rules. You can't change that sometimes you have to lie to get the truth about certain things. You have to go stretch the truth a little bit. So I guess that's what I mean. That's what I'm taking on it. So
When I read the quote, I thought about how commercials and productions give out statistical numbers of who used a product and who liked it and who bought it, which age groups and stuff like that. I feel as those numbers can be challenged, because that's just the average or the medium, and sometimes it can actually not be the average or the medium. It can be the mold or the range. So it's like, what percentage of data are you actually looking at? And The answer for the competitor would probably be to deny it, because it's all the same data. It is all from the same scale.
My take on the quote is that once something reaches its highest limit, which would be the source, it can't get any higher. That's it. That's its highest peak.
So the last question that Mr. Miles wants to answer is, when we see an average reported, what do we need to ask besides which kind of average is being used? So, go ahead.
One of the things can be finding out actually how they calculated the data and how they got it, whether it was like through a survey or paper, online,
like, who's it targeted to? Like, was it just for kids, adults, certain, like, age groups, or, like, or even races?
I guess we need to ask the duration of this average. Like, I guess it can differ if, say, we took a poll of 100 kids for 1 hour compared to 100 kids to 5 hours. So I think it's the duration that we need to start asking also, and how that plays a part in the average and the number that we actually receive. Jacoby, Mojo Jojo. So we read up to page 100 for our night's reading, and I think it was kind of really interesting, just because it seemed like also like another repeat of what we were already talking about, but it's okay, I guess. So we have to read chapters 3, which was page 50, to chapter 9, which was page 100. And basically in chapter 3, it talked about, like, large samples, but, like, low-frequency events. And it was more like an estimate of the low-frequency events, which I thought was really interesting. Because if you have a large group of people, you would never think that it would be, like, I guess, a low number. In general, you always think that it would be a high number. So I thought that was interesting.
So I decided to talk about the one-dimensional picture. And this, they talk about how grass maybe may have a different look, but mean the same thing. So, for example, me, Mojo Jojo, and Blossom might both make $500 in a week. But if we graph it two different ways, she can make it look like she makes more money than I do, or I can make it look like I make more money than her, just by the different ways we graph it. Like, she could make it dollars per hour, and I could make it more than she does, or she makes more than I do. But at the end, we're both making the same amount of money. It's just in two different situations or scenarios.
Okay, so I basically just want to, like, retouch what Jacoby said. Like, most of the data sometimes that we see in graphs or charts dealing with statistics of an age group, it can be, like, one set of data can be 17-year-olds compared to 25-year-olds of who smoke more cigarettes during the year. And the graph can make it seem as though 17-year-olds that's actually underage smoke more cigarettes than those who are 25, when it can actually be the same amount of people. And the way they can do that is by using a smaller... By doing that, they also have the ability to trick people and, like, can take and manipulate the data in a situation when actually a lot of people don't actually, like, look at it and analyze the data that's given to them, or giving false information, and being in... The information is becoming misleading as well. Power pump! Power pump! Power pump! Blossom, command around the leader. Bubbles, she has the joy and the laughter. Pops her cup, and she's the toughest fighter. Power pump, save the day. Fighting crime, trying to save the world. Here they come, just in time.
To select one sentence in chapter 4, and that we believe that, you know, represents the main points of the chapter very good. And I picked chapter 4, page 57, maybe like the second paragraph, well, on the other side, second paragraph. And it says, when this comes down to is that, wait, what this comes down to is that the only way to think about IQs and many other sampling results is in ranges. Is, I think it kind of like represents the whole chapter just because everything is like that we talk about in the book is kind of in groups and categories. And ranges more is the like, it's from a certain set to another certain set, meaning that anything between kind of falls like in it. So I think that kind of has something to do with like the whole chap, like with the whole main point of the chapter. Because like chapter 4 kind of talks about basically like I kept seeing something come up like estimation error with like a probability of 0.05, and I don't know, like it comes in ranges, so it can be anything from a certain number to another certain number, if that makes sense.
Ignoring these errors, which are implicit in all sampling studies, has led to some remarkable silly behavior. This is located on page 57 at the bottom on the third paragraph. It's like it's the first sentence. I feel like with statistics on a product, especially you, it's just like if somebody came up with a hairspray and this hairspray was supposed to make your hair grow, and statistically your hair will probably grow in like 2 months if you use it every day. But that can just be the average. We forget about the other natural effects of how hair grows, because everybody hair doesn't grow in the same pace, and that's not taken into the results of the hair growth by using this hairspray. It can also be with other products as well, like soap, like Proactive, that you can see results in 30 days, but that's just the average, and it also depends on the person because it may take longer.
So Mr. Moles also left another comment on our other podcast stating that Chapter 5 talks about the wrong way to make a picture graph, and is there a right way? And personally, I do believe it is a right way to make a picture graph, just because kind of related to the quote I used for Chapter 4, like the ranges on graphs can have a big difference of what we actually interpret. So it could be a percentage change or something, for example. Like, the range of the graphs can vary from different graphs to graphs. So, I mean, sometimes picture graphs have different starts and ends. So, I guess that's, like, a different way why everybody interprets a graph something else. And, it's not like math related, but like I know like in physics when I like SAT or something, and the kids each, we had like a activity where each of the kids was like doing some type of trying to see how far to get back to the baseline, and each person started from a different baseline. So some people start from zero, but some people start from like say -400 or something, and that's just how it was. So yeah.
So our next question by Mr. Miles is what a semi figure attachment is. So
semi attached figure? Yeah. So it's like, I guess, drawing irrelevant conclusion. And I guess what I get out of it is basically like a conclusion is something like obviously that you need evidence for in order to present it. And I guess what they mean like irrelevant is that if you draw a conclusion but you don't have any evidence, then it's irrelevant to the conclusion because you don't have any evidence to back what you're saying up. So if I'm over here spitting lies out and I don't have any, and I come to a conclusion like, oh, well, this person scored an 80, but I don't have any evidence to it, then it's irrelevant because my conclusion can be false. And, yeah, a semi-attached figure. So our question from Mr. Miles is what does post hoc mean?
Post hoc is when data is collected after an event. So basically, like if a sports team, after they had played the game, a person will calculate how many times each player scored. And most of the time, they usually go back and rewatch the game to see. But there's also errors with that because sometimes you may miscalculate by a few points, and that can sometimes that doesn't help out with the average, because someone who may have played in the game only made four shots, which is 2 points, so that's 8 points towards the team. If you miscalculate that, you can get 10 or 6, and then their average would be off point. So that's what a post hoc is. Our last question that we got asked by Mr. Miles is, Chapter 8 warns against the dangers of exploitation. What is one example the author uses in this discussion?
Well, my take on what Mr. Miles is trying to ask is basically, like, exploitation is, like, predicting something, like a phenomenon. Like, I wouldn't call it a proposition because I don't think that's the right word to use. Some of these phenomena that lies outside the basis of experience. And, okay, maybe an example of that would be, okay, track and field. And we have, say, for example, a 1 mile race, and we look at the table of record times for that, you know, that 1 mile race. But if it's been, like, a downward trend, we can see a linear function because it's going, you know, it's declining on a steady, you know, at a constant rate. But if we, I guess, extrapolate and try to see what this trend would be like in, say, another 20 years for us. Like, I'm talking about SLA students still. Like, in another 20 years, maybe somebody can run it at a lower constant rate, but that can't be true because that's not really valid, because you can't really see in the future and you can't really predict something, even if it's going on a downward trend, because you might get someone that's like Bolt, whatever his name, Usain Bolt or something, and just like mess everyone up, and that's like his running skill. So you see what I'm saying? Like, you can't predict something that's in the future. That's my take on it.
So
it's Mojo Jojo and
Blossom.
All right, so here we're here to talk about Chapter 9
and Chapter 10.
Yep.
So, in Chapter 9, it was titled How to Statisticulate.
Ooh, that's a hard one.
All right. But in this chapter, they talked about how people try to manipulate and lie by using maps and the graphs. An example was, they talked about how, say, milk and bread were at a high demand at a certain time, at 1 year, and then the next year they switched, and so milk went down a dime and bread went up a dime. And so they're talking about how the percents can make it, they may make it seem like it's very different, or that there's the cost of living was going up or going down, but in all actuality, it stayed the same.
All right, so I'm going to talk about Chapter 10. And that chapter is titled "How to Talk Back to a Statistic." That word, anyway. So in this chapter, they basically talk about how they go into detail and explain what is a okay name and how articles use an okay name to make the article seem more believable. For example, they use in an article they say, "Well, Cornell study said such and such, such and such," but to see if the writer is telling the truth or not, see if they go along with what the study says, or do they go into their own opinion? Because using places such as university colleges and doctors' names and scientific laboratories make people believe the article and it just doesn't be true. Also, they talk about missing information, how articles leave out missing information or don't expand on what they say in the article. For example, they took a extract from the New Yorker magazine, letter from London, and they left out a bunch of like details that would be useful for the article. So yeah.
Since we have a couple minutes left, I think we should talk about basically what was our favorite chapter of High Law Statistics. It was a really interesting book.
For me, I would say chapter 7 was kind of interesting because in that chapter, it basically showed like the target of populations and groups and the study like population, like how they can actually use statistics to emerge people to believe certain things just by using like just fake examples. Just like I said about like the hairspray thing or like the proactive thing, like conducting studies on people and seeing how it works, but in average it's not going to be the same time as it is for someone else. So both people won't get the same effect and same results by using the same product at the same time. But statistically in the commercial or in the ad, it states that you will. And sadly, people really believe that. But.
Right. I think for me, I have to go way, way back. And I think it's kind of like our first chapter when he's talking, like a couple of first pages when he's talking about like just his Yale study. I think that was like a really interesting thing just to hear that from someone else's point of view. And not only that, like my favorite part of chapter 1, I believe, had to be okay, I'm gonna read this sentence. It says like a psychiatrist reported once that practically everybody is neurotic, aside from the fact that such use destroys any meaning the word neurotic. Take a look at the man's sample. That is whom has the psychiatrist been observing. And it's like it makes so much sense. It makes so much sense that people really just can't draw a conclusion from anything. And I mean, like, just from that same example, he's talking about like who has the psychiatrist ever seen. Like, he might have just seen like all people that's like absorbed with themselves or people that are really crazy from the nut house or something. And I mean, that kind of gives me like a basis for my life. Like, I'm not gonna believe anything no one says without their evidence in my face. So that's my best chapter.